Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
One, two, three, they're gonna run back to me. Cause I'm the best baby that they never gotta keep. One, two, three, they're gonna run back to me. They always wanna come, but they never wanna leave.
And I've gone to explain the whole way the budget. And this is why it's important to go talk to your guys, to really let them know the why. Because if they're knowing the why, it's okay to tell somebody no, but they need to know the why of the no. And where there's no fault in what it is, it's just the changing times. We're worried about budget constraints coming in through Tallahassee. We have no idea what legislature is going to do. And we have no idea what the revenue stream is going to be at the city or anything like that. So we need to work within our means. And right now, we're going through, I think the sheriff's office might be fixing to hit it, and I don't know if you have yet, our radios that are end of life. They're done. And years ago, we purchased all our radios at the same time. And guess what happens when you do things like that? They all start going bad at the same time. So we are actively seeking right now. We've got to replace all our radios. It's a huge officer safety risk. I can't, and that's just bad. I need my officers safe, and I want them to go home to their families.
So, big decision facing Mayor Reeves. Obviously, we're all well aware that we are, you know, the local issue right now is who he is going to hire to be the permanent chief of police. We have three candidates. That was Eric Goss. He is the acting deputy chief right now. Of course, Kristen Brown is the acting chief or interim chief, and she is going to be retiring here very shortly. And we have whittled this pool down to three people. One, you know, Eric, who's very capable. Another one is Brian Dugan. Sorry, I don't know which way to say his last name, but he is the retired chief from Tampa, so a much larger agency, like 1,000 cops. And also the current chief of police in Grand Rapids, Michigan, a city that's about twice our size, Eric Winstrom. And he's got experience in Chicago. He's done in all kinds of different things. It's a very interesting story. I listened to these interviews from, what is this, Wednesday, I guess it was. It seems like it was not yesterday. Anyway, listen to these interviews, all of them, and, I have thoughts. I have a lot of thoughts. And, you know, we're in a very weird position. And the weird position is that we've got a capable acting deputy chief that the union has lobbied heavily for, wants badly, because they're the guy he's the guy they know. He knows the town, he knows the culture, people know him, and he's certainly capable of doing the job. That's option one. That's sort of the most obvious option. Also, it's worth noting, he hasn't been doing this job of being deputy chief for very long. There's a health issue with the guy who had been the deputy chief, Kevin Christman, who, frankly, I thought should have been the chief back when we hired Eric Randall. Kevin has been waiting and waiting and waiting. The problem is that Kevin had a medical issue that completely took him out of the running, and he's not even, you know, it just didn't happen. Couldn't happen. Wasn't available. Not an option. With Kristen leaving, she's not an option because she's retiring. So, you know, next batter up, that's Eric. But he just hasn't been leading the department all that long. And when I listen to him talk compared to the other candidates, what I took away was, if these three candidates were competing for a job in Abilene, Texas, or Springfield, Illinois, or at Albany, New York, it wouldn't be a competition. Or I should say it this way, Eric would not be one of the finalists. And I hate having to go on the radio and say this. I do. I hate having to say this because I love Eric. He's a friend. You know, I've known him a while. Okay. And I have all kinds of good relationships with the folks at PPD. But objectively based on experience and performance in the interviews, the other two candidates outperformed him in both categories. That doesn't make him the wrong choice. But what he's really got going for him is local connection. We know the product. We know who he is. And the people here, you know, the officers, the deputies, officers, I guess, deputies, sheriffs, officers, PPD, they want him. He knows the department. You know, he knows the radios are broken. He knows that you can't go on this, you know, we're facing that challenge. He knows that the tasers all need to be replaced. He's knows that the gym is old. He's working on getting us a shooting range. You know, he's working on getting us a deal with somebody who's going to provide the workout equipment for the gym at no cost to the city. He's a good candidate. Objectively, if it were for another city police chief, the other two candidates are significantly better objectively based on experience and performance in the interview. That doesn't make them the right choice. You now have a dilemma. You know, if you're the mayor and your dilemma is, do I do what the union wants and what a lot of people here have said they want and is kind of like making up for the mistake we made before of not hiring the guy locally and instead hiring somebody from the outside who turned out to, you know, I don't want to badmouth Eric Randall. You know, I like Eric, but, you know, he was not super successful as a chief for a variety of reasons that's not worth getting into now that he's no longer here. It wasn't entirely because he was an outsider, but that wasn't not a factor either. Outsiders has to be accepted by the indigenous structure. It can work to have outsiders come in very, very well. The military does it all the time. You know, you don't just promote the guy inside the ship to be leading the ship. You know, right? You move people around, it works. But also, people who come in from the outside, sometimes it doesn't work for whatever reason. You know, the secret sauce just isn't there. I'll give you a chance to hear from the other two. So I don't know what the mayor is going to do. He says he's going to make a decision next week. It's an election year. How unpopular do you think it will look for him if he decides to go with somebody from the outside and do what the former mayor, Griff Robertson, did that turned out maybe not to be the best decision? And it's going to go against what a lot of his own officers want and what a lot of people in this community are asking for is, you know, go with the guy we know because we like Eric. I mean, that's a hard choice to make. But what if he believes that the outsider is more capable, is got the best chance of keeping us safe, handling major crises if they come up, and really bring something to the department that it needs right now, which is massive experience. And both of these two guys have massive experience compared to Eric. I don't know how you make that decision. I'm glad I'm not the mayor. I've seen it here. You know, like, I mean, and you can make the case both ways. You know, look, they hired me. I was an outsider. And they weren't sure they made a good decision for about 6 months. Right? What do I know about the South or Pensacola? 12 years later, looks like a genius move. Well, I mean, unless you're certain politicians. let's just say. But, you know, I don't know for a fact, but I'm sure there were candidates who were here locally and they thought, well, you know, but this kid seems to have something that's different, that's better, that's, you know, we think it's going to work out. It could go the other way, too. I've been advising people here, you know, in the station of hire this person, don't hire this person. And sometimes I get it wrong. We've made some hires that I thought looked great. Oh, no, they weren't. You know, like really bad. So here, anyway, Brian Duggan, he is the former retired police chief from Tampa. He's been out of policing for a couple of years doing advising. And like he goes around and talks to folks about policing. And he works with the, you know, the cities that are getting the Super Bowl because that's something that Tampa has obviously done. And that's part of the process. So, you know, massive amount of experience.
I think most chiefs and most departments felt like they were under attack during 2020. I felt like society, police were the scapegoat of some of, you know, society's ill, so to speak. And a lot has changed in policing in our country since then. But what I did to help that issue was out there being on the street, you know, dealing with protests, talking to the troops, interacting with them, talking to protesters. You have to be there. And when your cops, I don't care how big the agency is, when your cops are out there dealing with protests and they know they're under scrutiny, if the chief of police is out there with them, giving them instructions, telling them what to do, owning what they do, I think that's very important. And that's what I did. You have to be out there. You have to be present, because your cops can get very paranoid, so to speak. And they're wondering, does the administration have my back? Am I doing this right way? Are they going to approve of this? Well, if the chief's out there, they know it. And when the orders are coming directly from the chief and you're in charge, that's how things happen.
So he ran an organization that was much larger than ours through 2020, through COVID, through the search for a serial killer that they caught. I mean, you know, through a lot of crises. So he's got the kind of experience that you get only by having experience. You know, if Eric had been running PPD for the last couple of years and he had that experience, this would be a totally different conversation. But he just hasn't. And that's also an unknown. You know, until somebody runs the organization, you just never know for sure. Eric Winstrom, his story is kind of wild. This is a guy from Grand Rapids. And, you know, his big brother was arrested for drugs, and so he kind of hated the war on drugs and cops. And so he went to law school in order to work on putting bad cops away. Like, that's kind of his background.
Which I had these lingering doubts about. While there, I had the opportunity to work at the New York City Police Department's Legal Affairs Bureau and the group of attorneys that fired bad cops, which I thought that was for me. That's what I wanted.
So that's kind of like, he'd never thought he was going to be a cop, but then he got a kind of a taste for it, and he wound up working in the projects in Chicago. He wound up working child sex crimes. He wound up working on civil rights. He wound up actually being one of the key police officers, especially because of his law degree, in Chicago, in developing their consent decree. That's the, you know, when an agency is totally screwed up and the Department of Justice comes in and says, all right, you got to fix this and this and this and this, and 400 pages of regulations later, and you have to make sure that they work and all that. And he was part of that. And through the riots in Chicago, through, you know, the stuff, you know, the 70 buildings destroyed, 300 police cars destroyed, 20 people killed in 48 hours. I mean, like, you know. And then he went to Grand Rapids, and then he hit George Floyd, 2020, COVID, and led the agency through all of that. And actually had to deal with a shooting in their town that led to just about riots, too. And so, you know, and for example, had to rewrite their entire use of force policy because of what he knew in his background as working on the consent decree, having a law degree, working on the riots in Chicago, all of that stuff.
I arrived, one of the first things I did, well, you know, as a new chief, you should always look at the policies in place, always look at the training in place. The culture is key to everything. But I looked at the use of force policies in the city of Grand Rapids, and I found them not to be what they could be. So I personally, as a policy guy, rewrote all the use of force policies and some other policies as well. So, and that was knowledge that I got from my time in Chicago.
Yeah, and he says he believes in holding people accountable, not because that's a way of, you know, chilling them. I mean, you know, the idea that this guy who wanted to be a lawyer so he could put bad cops away, you think, wow, how could that possibly be a great chief? Because he knows the flaws, the errors, the ways things go astray. And by the way, they want to keep him in Grand Rapids. They're not thrilled about this decision that he's leaving or that he's trying to leave, right? They want to keep him there. He's got young kids. He wants to come here to Pensacola.
One of the things that I brought to the Grand Rapids Police Department that I would tend to bring to the City of Pensacola Police Department as well, that I started, one of my first statements was, we are going to embrace a culture of accountability. It's not that the police is going to hammer everybody. And I want you to celebrate this culture of accountability. I want you to be happy that you are held to a higher standard. I want you to know that when you respond to a call and that someone sees you in your uniform, you're going to be identified as a representative of a police department that is the gold standard of policing.
Look at accountability as a good thing, because if you want to be a part of an excellence culture, you want to be a part of something where they hold you accountable and help you to be better. He went to he's told this amazing story. It's kind of long, but the short version is they had a bad shooting. They had a cop who wound up getting charged with murder for shooting a kid post George Floyd, a black kid, a Caribbean, I think. And I mean, they had like near riots in the city. and the prosecutor didn't want to release the body cam video of the shooting because it didn't look good. And he went to them and said, no, we absolutely have to release that. And they told him, you can't. And he said, stop me. And he did. And in his point of view, that was information flow to the community that created trust, even though it looked bad for the police department. So you've got a guy who's willing to do what he is convinced is the right thing for the community, even if it goes against kind of, you know, what the institution wants to do. So how do you pick between these three candidates? Two outsiders with vast experience and clearly the experience of being the head of the thing. You know, it's like the guy who's your assistant athletic director and then becomes, not the assistant, like offensive coach, and then he becomes the offensive coach, but he's never been a head coach. Could he be a great head coach? Yeah. Could he also not turn out to have what it takes to be a head coach? Yeah. Well, that's Eric Goss. And you know how sometimes you talk, you do interviews with the head coaches, and head coaches sound a little bit different than assistant offensive coach. You know, they sound different. These two guys sound different. So I don't know what DC is going to do. I don't know what I would do. And you know, this makes it sound like I'm like criticizing Eric, and I'm not. I'm saying he is. You can absolutely make the case he's the right guy for Pensacola right now. You could also absolutely make the case that Eric Winstrom is the right guy for Pensacola right now. And you could absolutely make the case that Brian Duggan or Dugan is the right guy for Pensacola right now, based on different criteria. I do not envy the choice that DC has to make. But I will say this. It's probably easier for him to pick Eric. It probably takes more, you know, risk, courage, however you want to phrase it, in an election year to pick an outsider, because we're not going to know right away if that's going to be a good choice or not. But I don't envy him this choice at all. 437-1620, 437-1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
Pizza's here.
Oh, great. I'd love some, but I'm worried about my stomach issues.
If you're worried about having diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools, it may not just be stomach issues. It could be a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. With EPI, the pancreas doesn't release enough enzymes to break down food, but EPI is manageable. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and talk to your doctor. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us today at 9:30 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weekdays 2 till 4, right after Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins on News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
At that point in my life where, and I think John can attest to this, that when, you know, Haircut 100 comes on and I start moving and shimmying and shaking, and then I'm like,
wait a second now. Boy.
What did I just do?
Shouldn't have done that.
Why are you sore? Because I did the dishes 4 days ago and I didn't stretch out. You know it's true. Mm-hmm. Hey, if you need to buy or sell a home, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty are so good at this. They sold 209 homes last year. That's crazy. 4 a week on average. In the height of the market when it was really hot, they were over 200. But then, you know, 3 years ago, it was down to 175, which is still a lot. I mean, that's 3 a week plus. And then it was 165. And then last year, back up 30% in a down market when people are struggling to sell homes. In fact, one of the things they're seeing success at is not just, you know, people who come to them, but people who come to them after having come to other realtors. Which, I hate that that's the case, but, you know, in a hard market, or a more difficult market, I should say, you know, it takes a certain level of skill and experience, and not everybody has it. They do. And so it makes a difference Why? How? Well, ask her. 786-3996. You can call her and ask her. You know, Andrew always says you're really good. You know, why? Can you tell me? And she will. Okay. 529 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. The White House is not ruling out President Trump invoking the Insurrection Act as protests over ICE operations continue in Minnesota 1 week after the deadly shooting of Renee Good. White House Press Secretary Carolyn Leavitt saying yesterday that only President Trump could say what would be his tipping point to declare an insurrection. The mother of one of Elon Musk's children is now suing his XAI artificial intelligence company over its AI tool Grok for allegedly creating deepfake sexually explicit photos of her. Ashley St. Clair's suit is just the latest complaint against the company after weeks of outrage over Grok reportedly being used to create non-consensual explicit photos.
You know, on the Trump Insurrection Act stuff, I said it yesterday, but I'll say it again. Though I criticize him a lot for a lot of things that he does, the Insurrection Act is actually built for just this situation. And it has been used by many other presidents in the past. And given what's actually going on in Minneapolis, then, you know, I think I support this move.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papamore. Anti-ICE protests in Minneapolis leads to... But the warning did not stop demonstrators.
The Insurrection Act will allow the president to deploy federal troops or federalize the National Guard to suppress rebellion or domestic violence. A White House spokesperson says Tim Walz, Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey, and Democrat leaders in Minnesota have done nothing but turn up the temperature.
Fox's Madeline Rivera, House Democrats set to hold an unofficial hearing today in St. Paul, Minnesota, called Trump's deadly assault in Minnesota.
The Immigration Subcommittee Democrats, we have been putting together a list of what constitutes meaningful reforms.
Washington State Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal posting on X, and Venezuela opposition leader Maria Corina Machado presents President Trump with her Nobel Peace Prize. She won last month. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531. It's News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne on a cold start to our Friday morning, 28 degrees right now. We'll get to our forecast with Brooke Richardson in Channel 3. That's up here in just a few minutes. Baldwin County deputies arrested a California man after finding 65 pounds of marijuana during a traffic stop on I-10. Andre Hernandez was pulled over on the 58-mile marker Tuesday. A police canine alerted to drugs in that vehicle. Deputies say they found the marijuana concealed in trash bags and duffel bags in the trunk. Hernandez is facing drug trafficking charges. A firefighter was injured battling a mobile home fire in Escambia County last night. The fire broke out on Washburn Street around 9 p.m. The firefighter suffered fire-related injuries, was taken to the hospital. Nobody else was hurt. The state fire marshal was notified. The cause of that fire does remain under investigation. The Escambia Sheriff's Office looking for a man accused of impersonating a deputy and conducting a fake traffic stop. A woman in Century says the man pulled her over on January 5th on North Century Boulevard with lights on his dashboard and even showed her a badge. He had her get out of the vehicle and searched her truck for 15 minutes. Sheriff Chip Simmons said, if you're unsure about a traffic stop, call 911 and drive to a well-lit place. Well, a Canadian great white has apparently made her way to the Gulf Coast. More on this from News Radio's Austin Price.
The shark is 12 feet long and weighs 1,000 pounds. Her name is Ernst. Visiting the Gulf Coast after traveling over 3,100 miles from Nova Scotia in 99 days. Dr. Sean Powers from University of South Alabama explains that sightings of great whites are rare around here and usually occur in cooler months. Ernst is expected to leave by April as she prefers cooler waters. I'm Austin Price for News Radio 92.3.
Well, thank you very much, Austin. The Stanley Cup champs got a White House welcome. The Florida Panthers were honored yesterday after President Donald Trump called their playoff run one of the most dominant in NHL history. The president praised the team for winning back-to-back championships and for keeping the Stanley Cup out of Canada yet again.
The Florida Panthers entered the 2025 playoffs with extraordinary pressure to defend the title, but they also had an amazing aura about them. It was called the aura of winning. There's something nice about it.
And the Panthers beat Edmonton in six games last June to repeat as champions. President Trump couldn't resist a joke about their finals loss the year before to Vegas. It's 5:34 here at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our forecast with Brooke Richardson.
Plenty of sunshine today with a high near 64 degrees after a very chilly morning. Going overnight tonight, temperatures are going to drop near 50 degrees. Heading into Saturday, partly sunny skies, high near 58. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 34. We are going to be looking at a small chance of some precipitation on Sunday morning, watching closely for a chance of a few snow flurries. That chance does remain low with temperatures warming up in the afternoon near 46. Stay connected, Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And again, a cold start right now, 28 degrees. We've got clear skies. And your next news at 6, breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. President Trump and Northeast Governor said they will direct the nation's largest grid operator to hold an emergency power auction that would force technology giants to pay for the construction of a fleet of new plants. The unprecedented move aims to quell concerns about data centers driving up energy costs. X said in a statement that Elon Musk's AI chatbot Grok will not be able to edit photos to portray real people in revealing clothing in places where that is illegal. The announcement follows a global backlash over sexualized images of women and children, including bans and warnings by some governments. Buoyed by yet another blockbuster earnings report and a new U.S.-Taiwan trade agreement, Taiwan semiconductor manufacturing company is poised to accelerate its multi-billion dollar expansion in Arizona. The world's largest contract chipmaker has already committed $165 billion in the U.S. However, TSMC executives have signaled that spending will rise even further. Futures are slightly higher. That's your money now.
Hi, I'm Billy Anderson with Anderson Subaru in Pensacola. Add more road to your trip with the new 2026 Subaru Crosstrek or Forester Hybrid. Our new hybrids will keep you going no matter where the road goes. With up to 597 miles per tank, the Crosstrek Hybrid easily takes you to more places. And the Forester Hybrid sports a driving range of up to 581 miles per tank. Mileage like that lets you journey farther. And combined with Subaru's legendary capability of standard symmetrical all-wheel drive, you'll be able to handle any unexpected conditions and terrain with ease. Paved roads, gravel roads, just about any road, they're all fair game in the new 2026 Subaru Hybrid. Better fuel economy, legendary reliability, you'll find both in the Subaru Crosstrek Hybrid and Subaru Forester Hybrid. Love goes the extra mile at Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola. For details, call 877-554-9791.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
Do you have questions regarding your plants and landscaping? If so, The Garden Line is for you. I am Mike Wiggins, and every Tuesday morning at 9, we are here for you on News Radio 92.3 to answer your questions. Seasonal changes call for different activities in your lawn and garden, so tune in and text or call with your questions on The Garden Line on Tuesdays at 9 and an encore each Saturday at the same time.
The Garden Line on the Pensacola Expert Panel, Tuesdays at 9 on News Radio 92.3.
Are you ready for a triple dose of wit, insight, and laughter? Tune in to News Radio Pensacola for the Markley, Van Camp, and Robin Show from 11 to 2. Your daily dose of engaging conversation and hilarious banter. Join Jamie Markley, David Van Camp, and Scott Robbins as they tackle the biggest news stories, pop culture moments, and everything in between. They'll keep you entertained, informed, and laughing out loud from start to finish. Don't miss a minute of the fun. Tune in to the Markley, Van Camp, and Robin Show, 11 till 2 on News Radio Pensacola.
Good morning, I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Joining us now by phone, we have Mike Wood. He is the Public Information Officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Mike, welcome back to the show, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning. By my estimation, we don't have a lot of crimes, big, you know, noteworthy crimes that have happened in the last week, which is always a good thing. But we do have a kind of a follow-up on a story that we talked about last week involving what you kind of said that there was this professional roaming band of thieves that had hit the, Family Dollar. Is that right?
Yeah, and professional or not, is just a guess on my part. We've seen this sort of thing in the past where the method of operation is similar on several burglaries at the same locations, or the same brand of location. In this case, it was a Family Dollar. And they hit one on Cervantes Street. And usually when something like this happens, they're from out of town and they go on down the interstate to the next town. But it looks like we've had or there was an arrest made of several individuals in the Tallahassee area for burglarizing another Family Dollar. Now, if it's connected to this one, we don't know that yet. We're investigating that. It's we're still looking at it. But if hopefully they are connected and we can put this one to rest.
So, you know, it's kind of weird as I'm thinking about this, how I'm just spitballing, but I'm imagining that the appeal to a criminal is that, well, you know, they're all very similar to each other. And so if you learn how to hit the one, you've acquired a kind of intelligence that is applicable to other locations. Is that, do you see that very often where the thieves will hit like similar store, similar brand because they're similar, you know, design or whatever?
I've seen it several times, but it's not often.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Well, I wouldn't think this level of I wouldn't think this level of organization, despite what the movies tell you, is not all that common anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the stores keeping cash inside it's getting more scarce. A lot of the transactions are done with credit cards and debit cards nowadays. So, you know, even convenience stores having the amount of cash in the registers that they used to have is just not there anymore.
Is the reduction in cash as a currency, as opposed to credit cards or a digital pay by phone, whatever, has that led to a reduction in ordinary, you know, robberies of this sort or of any sort? Have you noticed? Is that a trend?
Again, this has got to be a guess on my part without looking it up to know for sure. But I can tell you that armed robberies at places like banks and convenience stores are just not where they used to be 10 or 15 years ago.
Well, gosh, isn't that bad news? That sounds like awesome news.
But listen, on the other hand, let me tell you what's up. And that's people getting conned or scammed online for much, much more money than that people would get in a robbery. That is way up because of computers.
Yeah, no, I from the stories I hear, that sounds exactly right. So that's a scary and, you know, sad alternative to it. Let's see. One of the questions that I had for you last week, I had, anything else that's happened like overnight or over the last week that we haven't talked about?
No, we've got a lid on it right now, I'm proud to say.
All too eagerly watching the various interviews with the police chief candidates, I bet. So I assume the department is just waiting to find out, right? DC told us yesterday that he's likely to make a decision next week. So, you know, let's just get this done with and over with, and let's know who's going to replace Captain Brown or Chief Brown, right?
Yeah, I guess it's like we're a bunch of kids waiting up to see what we're getting for Christmas. We're just waiting on the delivery and the news to be made, and then we'll take it from there.
So do you leave, like, cookies and milk out for D.C. to come down the chimney with the announcements? I'll retract
the
question.
Well, you know, whatever.
Oh, it's a silly question.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Last week I had a chance to go look at the Sheriff's Office, the Real-Time Crime Center, and I knew what it was, but sometimes until you put your eyes on it, you don't really know what you know. And I was amazed at the level of information, the coordination, the volume of resources, the use of AI, all the different cameras. What is PPD's participation in this?
Well, we participate heavily. We have Julie, who works for us, that is at the Real Time Crime Center, does a fantastic job. I mean, it seems like she's there 24/7. Of course, she's not, but always there when we need her. And again, this is one of the biggest things that's ever happened to law enforcement in Escambia County is the formation of that center. And it's done a lot of good, and we just hope to see it even get bigger. And as technology advances, I'm sure it will.
You know, you've been doing law enforcement for more than 3 years. a little more than that.
Yeah, a little bit.
And so you have been around from, I mean, basically the dawn of the computer era when it came into law enforcement through today, and you've seen all the technology changes, you've seen what's happened. What's it like now to hear over the scanner, or not even the scanner, but over your radio, as you're hearing calls get handled, dispatch, instructions, information? You've got drones, you've got canines, you've got the real-time crime center, you've got license plate reading camera. You're seeing the practical, or hearing the practical effects of that. help me understand what the difference is that that's making.
It's a huge difference from when I began back in 1987. We get a call over the radio, we respond to it. Hopefully there's some evidence there, there's some fingerprints there, and that's all. And maybe we had a witness, and that's all we had. Now officers are seeing the calls pop on the screen before dispatch even gets it out, so they're already on the way there. We've got the technology to at crime scenes to help us solve the crimes better. We've got genetics now play a part in it that we can solve crimes that are years and years old. So things have come such a long way. And, you know, I'm not going to be around to see it, but I'm excited to see what's in the very distant future in law enforcement, to see how much faster this can go. So it's come a long way, Andrew.
You know, one of the things that was mentioned is that the ShotSpotter technology, you know, lost its funding. And so that's going away, although I guess it hasn't actually ended yet, was what I thought I took away from Lieutenant Beach's comments. But he and Andy Hobbs have made the comment that in the grand scheme of things that are available to us now, ShotSpotter wasn't nearly as crucial a tool as we once thought it was, and that a lot of law enforcement agencies are finding other more useful ways to solve crimes, especially shootings, and that the RTCC, the Real Time Crime Center, is able to do that even without ShotSpotter. Is that your assessment too?
Yeah, that's right. But ShotSpotter, just what it does is it gets the call out quicker.
Okay.
And sometimes it'll get the call, it'll make us aware of a shooting that otherwise we would not have been aware of. So it has its place. But like you just indicated, there are other ways that we're able to respond and to solve crimes besides just that. But again, it's a valuable tool in getting us headed that direction just a bit faster.
Mike, I don't know if you saw, it was a story from, I think, overnight from yesterday, that in Gainesville, there was an incident where apparently this guy goes into this store and murders somebody. That's at least what we think after the fact. But then police basically encounter him outside in the street in the middle of a busy intersection, only a couple of miles away from the campus of Florida. And they get involved in a multiple, like, minutes long, 2 minute long shootout with this guy on the streets. I mean, people in neighboring businesses are, you know, laying on the floor hoping for dear life they don't get shot by a stray bullet. One of the car dealers in the area said he got 6 cars hit by random stray bullets. 2 cops were injured in the process. The guy was killed. I see a story like that, and I think, I don't know what to think, but it just sounds like crazy time to have something like that happening on the streets of America.
Yeah, you know, that's something that officers face every day. We don't know what we're getting into when we get there. And when you're dealing with somebody, and we've talked about this before, that's already made up their mind. They just don't care what happens to them. They don't care if they die. They just don't care about anything. And they will do anything to try and either hurt or kill as many people as possible before they die, or they'll do whatever it takes to not go to jail. So we have to, every single call we go on, we have to keep that in mind. That's why backups are sent. That's why officers sometimes are accused of being a little bit too heavy-handed when they first arrive on scene. But we just never know. So we have to be prepared for anything. And unfortunately, sometimes things like that happen. And good training is all I can say on that. We train all the time for scenarios like that. And just try to be careful as best that we can. But we're never going to have the upper hand when somebody else plans this thing ahead of time and knows exactly what they're going to do, and we simply don't.
Well, and of course, part of the problem in a situation like this is if you've got people in cars all around, it's not such an easy thing to just take out the bad guy. The bad guy is unfettered by any rules of engagement. They'll shoot at whatever, and they did. Law enforcement have to think about who's behind that person, what might I do by accident if I miss, all of that kind of stuff, you know. And so that level of restraint out of concern for the public, because ultimately public safety is the goal. And, you know, it's balancing it just like you're balancing it with a car chase question. Is it more valuable to risk the public by chasing or by letting them go? I mean, these are hard things to decide on the moment, right?
Yeah, you've got to not only identify the person that is the target if you're going to fire your weapon, but you also immediately at the same time have to look at what's beyond that person in case you miss. And that's something that we have to think about in just a split second. There's a lot going on in an officer's mind before he or she pulls that trigger. And again, that's part of training. We have to take into account all of that before that trigger is pulled.
And we always like to end with a cop myth or a did you know. Do you have one for me this week, Mike?
Yeah, this is a did you know, and since we're talking about awaiting the news on the new police chief,
yeah.
I just wanted to let you know that I did a little research on this and on police chiefs, and the average length of a police chief's tenure is approximately 7.3 years. Now, one that comes from the outside, those chiefs generally have a shorter tenure, averaging around 2 to 4 years. And the longest chief of police, and this is a Florida chief of police, and this is according to the Guinness Book of World Records, was Millard Jordan, who served 51 years and 243 days from 1962 to 2014 in Lahti, Florida, which is a bit southwest of Jacksonville.
What was the number of years? 50?
51 years and 243 days. Sounds to me like he got, maybe he was 19 when he made chief. I don't know, but that's a long time. That's a long time.
That is an elderly sheriff or elderly police chief for sure. And you know, you mentioned that number is very stark. Seven in average. Was it three from insiders? Is that right? Or three from outsiders?
Yeah, two and a half to 4 years from outsiders. And there's some challenges for them right off the bat.
What is the average? Do you have it broken out for what the average is from people who are hired from within? Because obviously they're the ones balancing the other out. So I would figure it'd be more in the like 10 to 12 vicinity.
Yeah, that was the first figure, which is the 7.3.
Oh, okay. That is the figure for those hired from within. I thought it was everybody all together. Okay, got it. Okay. Okay, but still, I mean, a five-year difference based on inside and outside. That's surprising. Okay. Very good. Mike Wood.
I was going to say, look at our former chief Dawes that served from 1980 to 1994 as chief of police. That's a long time, too.
Yeah. Excellent. Very good. Well, Mike Wood, he is our public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. As always, Mike, thank you for the time. Thanks for teaching us the law, helping us understand situations, and keeping us safe. I appreciate it, sir.
Thank you.
Absolutely. 550 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Calling all nonprofits, if you serve Escambia or Santa Rosa County and could benefit from a grant of $100,000, Impact 100 invites you to a Link and Learn workshop on January 27. I'm Martha Holden, president of Impact 100 Pensacola, and we've awarded over $18 million to organizations right here. To register for this free workshop and learn more about grants, check us out on Facebook or visit Impact100Pensacola.org. That's Impact100Pensacola.org.
Hi, this is Todd Thompson, President and CEO of the Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce. Tune in to the Pensacola Expert Panel for the Chamber Connection Show that will keep you informed on what's going on with your Chamber of Commerce. Tune in this Monday morning at 10 to find out about our upcoming events, all of our different programs, and what's happening with our local business community. It's the Chamber Connection Show every other Monday at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Is your business, church organization, civic group, school, or other nonprofit organization having a fundraiser or other community event? Let News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 help you spread the word. Send us your information to be presented on our Here's What's Happening weekly announcements. We look forward to hearing from you. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
When breaking news hits, we're there to cover it. Fox News, WER-TV, News Radio team on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Si la luna ya me dicen dónde voy. Ay, 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 mi amor.
I'm sorry, I just love this song. I'm not much on Mexican music generally, but Los Lobos in Desperado, when he's up on the counter playing his guitar in the bar in the beginning,
yes.
That's what this is from. And plus, that is just a great movie.
Did you bring chips and salsa?
I'm
already hungry.
I did not. Olé. Olé. 5:53 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. The White House not ruling out invoking the Insurrection Act over the protests in Minnesota as ICE operations continue there now, a week after the deadly shooting of Renee Good. Press Secretary Carolyn Leavitt yesterday saying that only the president could say what his tipping point might be. Venezuelan opposition leader Maria Corina Machado has now gifted her 2025 Nobel Peace Prize to President Trump. The two met at the White House Thursday, and Machado told reporters she presented the medal to Trump in appreciation for deposing Venezuela's former leader, Nicolas Maduro.
What about the money? Doesn't the Nobel Prize come with like $1 million? I think there's a significant amount of money that comes with, in that vicinity.
I've never won a Nobel Prize. I'm not 100% sure on that.
11 million Swedish kroner, which is $1.1 million. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, funny, it doesn't mention
that she transferred the money, or just
mention. Yeah, it doesn't mention that she gave the money.
Also,
yeah.
I think that comes with a like when you buy a ticket, you know, for an event. I think it comes with that same little thing that says non-transferable to any other party.
You're probably right. Yeah, Verizon customers, Andrew, will be getting a $20 credit for that day-long outage here this week. In a statement posted on social media Thursday, Verizon said it did not meet the standard of excellence that its customers expect.
Does that seem like enough?
No.
I would. Okay.
Well, it was only one day.
It was only one day.
But that's like 12 hours.
Yeah, what's a monthly cost for Verizon? 30, 40 bucks, 50 for an individual?
It's got to be more than that.
It's got to be more than that.
I pay 15 bucks on Mint Mobile. I'm telling you, it works great. Personally.
Yep. I'm in the same boat as you.
It was because we were paying like 80 bucks for the two of us and adding a kid, you know, on Verizon. We're like, And I had been a Verizon customer since cell phones existed. I had been a Verizon customer since the last century. So,
wow.
Yeah, but I, you know.
And did you get the really cool personalized Christmas card from Ryan Reynolds?
No, I don't remember. But I like Ryan, though. Anyway, so I would think that what you would do is waive a month. That still won't make some people happy, but it's sort of
at least it's
going above and beyond. Yeah. It's really saying, okay.
Here's $20.
Yeah, $20 seems pretty paltry.
Yeah, it is.
To me, if I was, because we, you know, in the grand scheme, a half a day is not an equivalent of $20. It's worth less than that. But what are you trying to buy with your $20? You're trying to buy goodwill, good PR. You're trying to make people feel whole or feel better and not feel like they were wounded or hurt, which a lot of people who depend on their phones, you know, really, I mean, the point of this is, I think, like, your cell phone is worth way more than $20 a day. You only have to pay whatever it is, 15, 60, 100, whatever. Okay, but we all know that it's, to our lifestyle, it's worth a lot more. So I would think that if, you know, if the people of Verizon were smarter, I think the number should be higher. But, you know, I didn't have an outage. I don't need the money from them. So, you know, whatever. My phone worked okay, $15 a month. 550. Who do you use, John? Or what do you?
T-Mobile.
And how much do you pay?
I think it's like 80.
Oh, God. Some,
but that's two phones, two watches, I think.
Okay. If you add up all the alternatives, I can see how good it up. Anyway, I think that Mint is a T-Mobile user. Like, they're a subcontractor within T-Mobile's network is who they primarily use. So
right, and Mint bounces off all the towers, so you know they all have contracts with each other.
437-1620, 437-1620. Oh, did you see? You know what? I actually have a little bit of time. I can talk about this maybe. The story this week about the CDBG funds, the Community Development Block Grant Disaster Relief, CDBG DR funds. I know, it's a lot of... This is the housing money from Sally, okay? This is the big dust-up at City Council Monday and last night where they, you know, the money that was going to go to help people rebuild, restore their homes from Sally 5.5 years ago, right, is now going to go to fix things that were done at the port, because the port was also damaged during Sally that they've been waiting on, just like Wayside Park was damaged during Sally. And, you know, the city council members on Monday were all upset. How dare you? What's wrong with you? We promised them this money. And basically the Commerce Department here in Florida had called, that's who does these grants, had called the city and said, we don't think you're going to make the deadline on this, probably because other people in the state are not making their deadlines on this. And so you might want to reallocate that money to something where you can actually meet the deadline. And it has to do with how complicated it is to get repairs on a home. You can't have done repairs on a home. It's like FEMA money. You know, if you touch it, you're out. And so, you know, it was going to be hard to qualify, and the time frames involved to get qualification were not going to fit within the 2027 limit. And so the city decided, you know, it makes more sense for us to move the money over here. And we'll keep doing housing repair help for people when we can. Well, you know, Charles Baer was frustrated about this, and Jen Brera was upset about this, and Allison Patton said, you know, look, I told people they were going to get their homes repaired, and they're not. Well, the mayor in the press conference yesterday explained that's why they did it, is because it's better to spend the money on something that is actually related to salary that we can control instead of running the risk, high likelihood, that they weren't even going to be able to use the money, would have to give it back, and stringing people along even longer about something that's never going to happen for their homes. So to me, this is why you always ask for clarification, follow up. What's the other side of the story? Instead of like running with a, God, the city's stupid and the mayor's stupid and why don't they do anything right? You know, ask questions, hear the other side, pay attention, try to understand. Because even if you wind up in the end saying, well, I don't agree with that decision, you know, at least you've got both sides. You know, at least you've taken the time to understand both sides of the equation. Because, man, when you jump to an extreme criticism based on partial information, that usually doesn't turn out.
Local Talk in the morning.